Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This month, Republican former President Donald Trump concluded a successful campaign that will land him back in the White House, and he's already moving to reshape government. Here in Illinois, Governor Pritzker's management and budget team has predicted that Illinois will face a $3.2 billion budget deficit. So does this sound like a good time to be a Republican or not? Well, we're going to talk with one of the top Republicans in the state this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guest this weekend is Downers Grove State Senator John Curran. He is the Illinois Senate Republican leader, one of the four legislative leaders in state government. And state lawmakers went back into session this past week with money and probably some politics on their minds. Senator Curran has been in the General Assembly representing the 14th District since 2017. He became the Senate Minority Leader last year. Before joining the legislature, he served three terms on the DuPage County Board, and before all of that, John Curran was an assistant Cook County State's attorney. He's in private practice now. And he's got some formidable challenges ahead in Springfield. We're conducting this interview via Zoom, and Leader Curran, welcome.
Thank you, Craig. Very nice to be with you.
It's great to have you. Senator, you and your Republican caucus are concerned that the state of Illinois is spending money that it doesn't have. Now, to be fair, that's what state governments often do, regardless of who's in power. But what's the particular concern here?
Well, Craig, since Governor Pritzker took office 6 years ago, the state budget has increased by about $13 billion, nearly eight. And to give the listeners context, that's over a 30% increase in spending. Last year alone, it was $1 billion in tax increases on businesses and families because there has been no move to restrain or constrain the growing spending in the state budget. Now we see what, as the federal dollars have tapered down from COVID relief, we see that the upcoming budget is going to have a $3.2 billion deficit as we begin. Our concern is, from what we have watched the last several years under this governor, that the first option is tax increases to plug a deficit in the budget. And we do not think that that's the correct way to approach this.
What kind of taxes do you think the governor is anticipating, or has he already put out?
He has not. So he has not put anything out. We are going to find that out in early February, or actually February or maybe March, depending on when they set his budget address. The governor will present a recommended budget to the General Assembly at that time. Last year, he had a plethora of tax and fee increases in it. But, you know, not all of them get approved, even though it's a supermajority Democratic legislature. One of the tax increases the governor asked for last year was actually an income tax increase on every Illinoisan that makes less than $250,000. So it was actually surprising for a progressive governor to put forward a regressive income tax increase proposal that would only hit those that made $250,000 or less. So that was something that the Democratic legislature didn't look favorably on.
Now, that's not the proposal that failed at the ballot box, the graduated income tax. This was something different, right?
Oh, this was a reduction in the personal exemption that everyone gets, that you take on your state taxes. It is phased out under current law, $250,000 to go. So his proposal didn't apply to anyone, what we would call probably high income earners. But that reduction was only going to apply to those that made under $250,000. That was last year. That got dropped. We don't know what is going to be contained in that budget address next spring.
And now, who do you feel is going to suffer, given the level of shortfall that we may be experiencing?
Well, it depends on what the priorities are going to be. But I can tell you right now, even under the current spending, those that are suffering are really our most vulnerable populations. We continually rank in the bottom tier in the country on spending on adults with disabilities, disabled adults. We look at our DCFS system. We have constant problems in terms of placement and for the children that are in the state's care, those, you know, oftentimes sadly abused, neglected children. So, I mean, those are the areas that have been getting neglected while the governor has decided it is good policy. And we're the only state in the Midwest to have such a policy to offer free health care to those that have not follow the proper system of immigration or illegal or immigrants here in this state. Illinois is the only one that offers that. And really it's those non-citizen programs is where the governor has turned to spend considerable state taxpayer dollars to the tune of, we don't know, but it's over $1 billion.
And how are you... when I've looked at some of the numbers, it's looked like, $180 million. Where is the billion figure coming from? And because I know Chicago has been asking for more money and sometimes has gotten it and sometimes it's not.
Well, the 180, you're talking about the migrant. So that, right. That is the recent migrant. But we're talking about the healthcare program that the governor has put in the law with the Democratic legislature and expanded. That is north of $560 million. We start adding all those components up. We don't know how much in total. I filed a transparency bill last year, trying to find department by department, program by program, how much are we specifically spending on that non-citizen category. It got ignored. But I'm pleased to see this year we've seen the someone from the House Democrats file a similar proposal on the fund transfers and looking for more transparency from this administration. So we're starting to get that call for bipartisan call for transparency from this governor. At the end of the day, Craig, a budget is a list of priorities. I argue that the governor's priorities are misplaced.
And now the arguments that we get from not just the governor's office, but advocates for immigrants would suggest that not treating or not paying for the treatment of these people would eventually cost more in the end when they show up at emergency rooms or other facilities where they will have to be taken care of regardless of their ability to pay.
You know, Craig, if this was such an enlightened policy, why does this not exist? We're an outlier. We are putting this burden on Illinois state taxpayers. Indiana a taxpayer in Indiana doesn't have this burden. A taxpayer in Michigan doesn't have this burden. Minnesota, I mean, on and on and on. We are that outlier in the Midwest, and only California is the only other state that has followed this model after we led on it. Even New York is not following this model, and they're moving more towards a more cost-constrained clinic system on this. I mean, at the end of the day, you are right. People are going to show up in the emergency room, but the burden we're putting on state taxpayers here is unique, and it's misplaced.
And as we move into the full legislative session this next year, there are going to be talks between the administration and Democratic and Republican lawmakers. And when you've got a deficit of, you know, $1 billion or more, they're either going to have to be cuts, or they're going to have to be, is it going to have to be new revenue? Where do you feel, besides migrant spending or immigrant spending on immigrants, do you feel there can be cutbacks without causing pain to those vulnerable populations?
The first step is going to be full transparency from this administration, a full accounting of where they are spending those dollars. You know, once we get to that, we have to focus on the core services that state government must provide, which is really looking at our truly vulnerable populations, the developmentally disabled community, which we need to do better with. Neglected and abused children in the state's care, we need to do better there. We are under these consent decrees that have been long before this governor. They've been decades where the state has been failing these populations. But this governor has had 6 years to correct that, and he's failed to do so. And the state is still subject to these court consent decrees because we are not providing the minimum threshold of care for these populations that we need to. I would argue that those are our two most vulnerable populations in this state, and we must do better.
Hey, that's where we should be spending money. Where should we be cutting?
Well, we're going to have to build this budget out, Craig, from there. And we have to do better with our core services. And a lot of the programs that the Democrats have put in place as add-ons, as COVID funds were very plentiful, we're going to need to cut those back or eliminate altogether, because that has been where this robust growth has taken place in state government. We've got to get back to focus on core services. At some point, if there's no additional revenue beyond the core services, that's where those cuts are going to need to be.
Well, as we're talking about priorities, one of the priorities for the state has to be considered education. What outlook do you see there? I mean, and I'm not just talking about the Chicago public schools, although obviously they're a big chunk of any education budget, but it's statewide that school officials, education officials, and advocates say are underfunded anyway. How do we deal with that?
And so one of the first votes I took when I got to the General Assembly was the new school funding formula, which looked to raise the floor on funding for the most impoverished schools around this state. That formula has been working. It requires an additional $350 million every year into that formula to raise that baseline. The state needs to continue to lean into that formula. That is assumed, because that's current law, when we talk about the budget deficit looming next year, that additional $350 million is already kind of baked into those assumptions. So we definitely need to continue to raise the floor in education. I would note with Chicago and CPS in particular, because you know, it's going to be a large part of your listening audience, they are not a tier one district anymore. They are not amongst the neediest districts around this state. They are tier two. That funding formula has additional dollars negotiated into it when this bill passed, and this was really kind of a compromise between downstate and Chicago for the Chicago school, public school system. Clearly that's been working, because they're no longer tier one, they're tier two. We've got to continue to elevate and raise the floor in those tier one schools around this state.
But Do you see any situation in which the state should spend a little, somewhat more in Chicago because of the populations that it serves? It may not be the neediest, but it's still pretty needy.
Well, I would tell you, Craig, I represent a caucus that represent. I lead a caucus that represents the vast majority of Western, Central, Southern Illinois. There are a lot of impoverished communities as manufacturing has moved away from Illinois, and really job opportunities have moved from those regions, and those impoverished communities, you know, have school children, have those same needs. And so that's why we put this formula in place, to make sure that we were being very objective about it, and it rather than where the center of political power in the state happened to be at the time. There's no doubt that the center of political power in the state is Chicago, but those districts, those families and communities downstate have some significant needs as well.
And, you know, they say a rising tide lifts all boats. Should the state be putting more money in above what is the required for the formula?
If we have it, yes. I would argue these past years with those COVID funds, that's where more of that should have been directed, rather than popping up new programs that maybe the a favorite idea of a particular legislator that was in a position of power at the time. Absolutely. Education is a core service for the state of Illinois. We have got to be more active participants in it. But, you know, Chicago, those tier one schools are all going to do better next year in terms of total dollars as we push more money into it. Baseline minimum is $350 million, but education is a core service, and that has to be prioritized above a lot of other spending items the state has developed recently.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and my guest is Illinois Senate Republican Leader John Curran of Downers Grove, one of the Four Tops, as they used to call them. I don't know if they call you guys the Four Tops anymore, do they?
I haven't heard it, so maybe that's been dropped.
Yeah, that's quickly, probably sure. Showing how old I am. But anyway, let's move on to one of the other, I don't know whether it could be considered a priority, but it's certainly a need. In Northern Illinois, the public transportation systems are euphemistically headed for a fiscal cliff as federal relief funds are running out for them. What should the state do about that challenge? And I know it doesn't affect the entire state, but it affects a good chunk, if not a majority, of the state's population.
Yeah, I mean, and this has been something that has been we've known about for a couple of years, and the legislature has not taken action yet. That it's going to need to take action by the end of this session here. There was a reform proposal put forward by the Democratic majority that was clearly intended to usurp and take power away from the suburbs, and essentially Chicago would be running the whole mass transit system throughout the Chicago, Cook County, Collar counties. That has gotten a lot of pushback from Democratic and Republican suburban legislators who want to ensure that, Chicago necessarily shouldn't be controlling pace in the suburbs and vice versa. We're not asking for suburban control of the CTA. So as we approach really what's going to be efficiencies and in operations, we're going to have to bring down the total cost of mass transit, which can be done. There may also be a need for some revenue to be plugged in, but that should not be from a statewide perspective. To turn around and ask downstate to pay for mass transit in Chicago and the Collar counties, I think there would be a significant equity issue there.
That, and I have been covering that story sometime. The pushback, at least I think the public perception of this, is that the pushback has come from the boards of the different transportation agencies themselves. And so now it's being characterized as the legislature trying to impose reforms and the boards saying, leave us alone, we know what we're doing. You're giving us a different perspective on that.
There's no doubt that these boards need to be reformed, but the proposal that was put forward would give additional control to I do think we need a more empowered RTA, but the way they created the voting structure of who would be on that RTA board, it was concentrated specifically in Chicago and Cook, and it did not give a voice to the suburbs to a level that the suburbs would have any sort of significant input on suburban mass transit. So as they figure out the formulation of the RTA or some other agency that usurps that role, we need to make sure that suburban mass transit riders who are also paying significant investment into that system are represented in that process. That original proposal did not do so.
The concept of it, though, of creating one super agency versus the RTA overseeing four other agencies, how does that, is that in and of itself a problem, or is it just how they were doing it?
You're still going to have some expertise. I mean, operating a suburban bus system is very different than operating the electric train system in the city of Chicago in a dense city area. So, so that is really where you lean into these separate agencies. If you have the RTA or some other agency greater empowered over budgets, fares, things of that nature to make sure, you know, we talk about the CTA and the lack of fare increases, since 2011. I mean, that is something that a more empowered kind of parent agency probably would not have let go and would have brought user fees up to mitigate what we now know is a looming financial, you know, I don't want to use the word crisis, but it's a financial cliff is what it's been called.
Indeed. I want to move on to somewhat more political issues. One, now that former President Donald Trump is retaking the Oval Office, Governor Pritzker is vowing to keep protecting reproductive and immigrant rights, among others. And he has said he wants to essentially Trump-proof the state. How do you feel about that? Those moves, I should say, ahead of January 20th?
Well, one, we have not seen any proposal, so it sounds like a nice tagline for the governor's progressive base. But the reality is, I don't understand how this is good for Illinoisans to take that tone right after the election with the administration that was just elected. It overwhelmingly throughout the country and put Illinois in a position to, it's not good for Illinoisans. Right away, the governor has positioned Illinois to be a constant, in a constant fight mode with the incoming administration. When I look at a state like Pennsylvania with a Democratic governor, with a national profile, you look at how he approached this right after the election, and it was, We're gonna concentrate on ways to work with the administration, a more collaborative tone. That's certainly where it should start if we were thinking about what's best for Illinoisans. The governor seems to be thinking about what's best for his future political presidential aspirations in a future Democratic primary in 2028. You gotta focus on the job you're elected to do. What's best for Illinoisans is first you try the collaborative approach. And so I was very disappointed in the governor's positioning on that.
I do want to ask, as a Republican leader, how you feel about some of the choices that he's making, at least as far as cabinet officials are concerned, that may impact this state. For example, Health and Human Services may be run by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is an anti-vaxxer and who sometimes quarrels with medical professionals. The Justice Department could be headed by Matt Gaetz, who's been under criminal investigation. The Department of Education could be phased out. Are you troubled or what by these kinds of things that could end up filtering down to Illinois when it comes to getting federal aid and such?
I think I'm really looking forward to the confirmation hearings. We have a wonderful system of government, and it is full of checks and balances. And my expectation would be that the United States Senate, just like the Illinois Senate does, would fully vet each and every nominee. In our system of government, no one gets everything they want. And that's one of the beauties of our system of government. So, if the United States Senate, as they're vetting these candidates, believe that they are best for, the country going forward. And quite frankly, there is a certain listening to the voters and what they just said. And, some of this, may be a surprise. Some of this was out there that this is what this administration was looking to do. And the voters elected this administration. So, no one should be trying to thwart the will of the voters. At the same time, I do think we have a system of checks and balances, and we'll see what happens in the U.S. Senate.
Indeed, we will. Let me ask you about your outlook for the future of the Illinois Republican Party. This is nationally, things are going well. Locally, like you said, there's still a veto-proof majority in both of the chambers. And there's still, I would think, some division between the MAGA factions within the party and the moderates. How are you navigating all of that?
Well, I have a diverse caucus that I lead. And we find a way to all work together. I would tell you what is holding Republicans back in this state is the most gerrymandered map, partisan gerrymandered map in the nation. Princeton rated this map, particularly in the Senate, gave it an F for competitiveness. And so you see that while only a third of the Senate was up this election cycle, and we have some possibly better opportunities in 2026 to gain seats, we had four Republican districts up to defend. The Democrats didn't even bother fielding a candidate in any of those four districts because they so super packed high propensity Republican voters into those districts. And then just write them off. So that's the type of gerrymandered nature we're dealing with. Governor Pritzker, when he ran for office, promised the voters of this state that he would veto any map drawn by politicians. He broke that promise, not once, but twice. And he signed two maps that were amongst the most gerrymandered maps in the nation. What we need is fair maps in this state. And, that's what we're working towards.
And fair maps has always been an issue that was considered progressive, even among Democrats. So why doesn't it ever get passed?
It has bipartisan support, but it is always held back by the powers to be, because ultimately it's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's those with power will do anything they can to keep it. And Illinois has a rich history of that. We see some of that playing out right now. Down the street in 219 North Dearborn, South Dearborn, sorry. So it is really about power. And the Democratic supermajority here doubled down on retaining power in this state and thwarting voters' opportunity to consider change. And that is ultimately the barrier or the hurdle that the Republican Party in this state has to work its way out of. Fortunately, 2026, we're going to have every statewide office up as well. We're going to have an opportunity to elect a Republican governor in this state and maybe change the course of this state a little bit more for the good, a little more pro-growth. Illinois has, since this governor's taken office, we rank 45th out of 50 states in GDP growth. That is something that we've got to turn around. We've got to be a top 10 state in a lot of these economic categories if we're going to grow our way out of these budget deficits.
Well, that is a perfect place to leave this. That is the final word. I want to thank State Senate Republican Leader John Curran for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.